like I said, I just dawned on me just a couple of days ago that I had Sunday school this morning, and I don't know why this subject, and don't really even remember exactly how I stumbled over it, but Lisa and I was talking coming over here about this, some things, and she was talking about the kids going downstairs, and I said, well, I said, I'm going to let you go down early, believe me, because I said, I don't want you sitting back there when I teach on this. Sanitize. She's always fussing on me for, did you wash your hands? No, I didn't wash my hands. But like I said, I really don't know exactly how I even come up with this. I know I was studying some stuff over in Deuteronomy and Numbers and Leviticus and things about leprosy and things about how they had to be quarantined and all that, and somehow got off over here on this. But anyway, that's sort of what we want to look at. I've just got a little outline here that probably going in the Bible in Numbers, probably chapter 19 somewhat, and maybe Numbers 31, depending on how far along we get with all this. But when I was looking at I never even had heard of the word quarantine until this epidemic and things. But then you go right back and look in the Bible and places, and you can find where they quarantine. You can find where they sanitized and purified. And you get to looking up purification and a lot of these things, and sanctification. A lot of these things sort of come from a lot of the same root words. Primarily meaning the same thing, clean or be cleansed. And I found this article about a man in Hungary that was, he was noted for inventing sanitation, or being sanitizing. And I say up front, he done a wonderful work, but he did not invent it. He discovered it, maybe. It's in the Bible. Something you invent is something you come up with, but he didn't invent it, but he discovered what already existed. And this man's name was Stimulus, and I don't think he's responsible for our stimulus package that we received undeservingly, but he is certainly credited for some good things. And I had a big article about him and read a lot of things, and I just sort of nutshelled it down, and I want to read just a few of the highlights. He became known over in Hungary back in his time as the savior to expecting mothers. There was a fever, a disease that was going on. And let me just read this, and then we'll sort of go from there. 1846, and see, in our minds, we, as far as sanitizing and things, it's hard to imagine that they wasn't already using the terminology and things way before 1846, and I'm sure they was means of sanitizing, don't misunderstand, but he was credited as developing something that would sanitize and prevent these mothers from dying. 1846, Dr. Stimulus discovered the simple yet an unknown at the time cure for an epidemic that had very rapidly claimed the lives of thousands, mostly new mothers, as well as their infants, known as the puerperal fever or childbed fever. This childbed fever grew rapidly, and it got up to almost 20% casualties. You think about 20, that's 2 out of 10 expecting mothers would die, or their infant. That's major. And it said that this fever began spreading here in Hungary around 1823, and between 1841 and 46 had a casualty rate as high as 18%. Dr. Stimulus, along with his colleagues, basically worked and specialized with expecting mothers in their delivering in local clinics, with the exception of one particular clinic. One particular clinic used only the midwives in their delivery cases rather than Dr. Simulus or his colleagues. I think most of us is familiar with the terminology of midwives, and they would have a midwife that would come and would take care of them. So they had one particular clinic that would not allow no one but midwives to come in and to perform these births. Simulus began a massive study. One clinic only used midwives in their delivery cases rather than Dr. Simulus or his colleagues. Simulus began a massive study as why this one clinic using only midwives had far lower casualty rate than all the other clinics. After studying aerial drinking water, foods being eaten, or any other possibilities of the reason among no casualties with the midwife clinics versus up to 18% with the other clinics, Simulus in his long-term study had concluded this. As Simulus and his colleagues would perform open-handed autopsies on the fever victims and mildly wash off before visiting with their expecting mothers for delivery, he concluded that they, as the doctors, were actually carrying the disease or the fever in some form to the patients. They didn't understand microgerms at the time. His conclusion was not only one of his conclusion was not until one of his colleague doctors had an injury on his hand and had performed an autopsy on one of the fever victims and had came down with a fever himself and died. Simulus immediately began a thorough cleansing, including changing all bed clothing between patients as well as not performing the autopsies prior to seeing other patients the same day. This germ theory of disease had not yet been accepted in Vienna. Thus, Simulus concluded some unknown cadaverous material that caused the childbed fever. He instituted a policy of using a solution of chlorinated lime for washing hands between autopsy work and the expectant examination of his patients. He did this because he found that this chlorinated solution worked best to remove the putrid smell of infected autopsy tissue, and this perhaps destroying the casual poisonous or contaminating cadaveric agent being transmitted by this material. The chlorinated lime solution that was used basically contained some of the ingredients of typical lye soap, ashes from wood, beef fat, and purified water. When combined and boiled, would make a cleanser. The results was that the mortality rate in the first clinic declined 90% and was the comparable to the second clinic of the midwives. The mortality rate in April of 1847 was 18.3% after hand washing was instituted and the cleansing. In May, the rate in June went down to 2.2%. In July, went down to 1.2%, August 1.9%, and for the first time since the introduction, the death rate was 0 2 months in the year following this discovery. Basically, Simulus had discovered antiseptics, preventing of spreading disease by way of disinfecting or purifying. Simulus may have discovered antiseptics, but certainly did not invent it. And this wasn't just one little area. I don't know exactly how many clinics, but I know there was at least 30 clinics that were spread abroad, and there was literally over a few period of years thousands of expectant mothers that died, and it got up to a rate of almost 20% that had died. So when he had come up with this, and after one of his colleagues had got a sore or some kind of a cut on his hand, and then he performed the autopsy up on one of these dead bodies, then he too come down with it and he died. So it come up, and Simulus finally realized somehow we're carrying this fever to these patients, and he was not actually credited for it until after his death in a lot of ways, because the medical society of that time frame would not, they wouldn't buy into it. There was no scientific, and the thing was that these doctors refused to take responsibility that, you know, they were the ones that was doing this, you see. So all the way up, he didn't become what you say a hero until after his death. But the thing was, what he come up with was they started washing with a solution that basically had the ingredients of the old timey lye soap. And the old timey lye soap, I remember when my grandmother used to make some lye soap, and I didn't remember how they done it, but it took beef fat, and it took purified water, and it took these different ingredients, and they would boil it and burn it until they get the ashes and do all that stuff. And when they would boil it, it would make a, what they called a lye soap, and which was a cleanser. So I thought about how much study that they had put into all of this before they ever come up with this, and sometimes they may have been just like we are. They sometimes, maybe if they turned to the Bible to begin with, you know, they may have saved some casualties. But regardless, when they came up with this, and if you notice, when they would go as far and say, at that time, see, they just wasn't aware of the theory of the germ, micro germs and things. So they really didn't understand. And today we look back and think, well, why didn't they change the bedclothes anyway? Well, they didn't know to. But when he started doing this, and they started changing out all their clothing, and they started completely washing before they would go from one victim to the other, next thing you know, the casualty rate went down from 18% within a few months down to zero. So look at the ingredients to this and compare it a little bit out of the Bible. In the 19th chapter of Numbers, I wanted to try to look through a little bit of that. And here at Numbers, if you remember, back in the 15, 16, 17th chapter over there was there was a man by the name of Korah, and I preached on this a while back, but a man by the name of Korah, and they conspired against Moses and kindled the anger of God against them, and God allowed this plague to come upon the people, and this plague took 14,700 lives. And this was back in about the 16th and 17th chapter. Now then, we're at the 19th chapter. And laws had already been given for those who defiled themselves as far as religious purposes. That was given over in the book of Leviticus and Exodus. But here in Numbers 19th chapter, as well as the 31st chapter, this cleansing was to prevent the spread of existing plagues which they would encounter in the wilderness, such as the plagues that was found in the 16th chapter just previous, that had already taken 14,000 something lives. As Moses was to lead a million plus people through the wilderness, just as God supplied not only food and manna and water, he also was keeping them from the spread of diseases by sanctifying and quarantining. So we always talk about how that God pre-equips, and how that here they're fixing to go through the wilderness for 40 years, and they're going to be exposed to people, the Moabs and people. They're going to be exposed to diseases and things that there's these diseases out there, and they're going to be exposed to them. So he pre-equips them, and he gives them the law of purification. So I want to start, and I'll be just skipping through here and there a little bit, but in the 19th chapter, in verse 1, and the Lord spake unto Moses and unto Aaron, and he said, this is the ordinance of the law of the Lord had commanded, saying, speak unto the children of Israel that they bring thee a red heifer without spot, wherein there is no blemish, and upon which never had came a yoke. And ye shall give her unto Eleazar the priest, that he may bring her forth without the camp, and one shall slay her before his face. And Eleazar the priest shall take of her blood with his finger and sprinkle the blood directly before the tabernacle of the congregation seven times. And one shall burn the heifer in his sight, and her skin and her flesh and her blood with her dung shall he burn it. And the priest shall take cedar wood and hyssop and scarlet and cast it into the midst of the burning of the heifer. And right there, this where we was talking about the disinfectant of a lye soap ingredient. So you remember one of those was ashes from a wood. And if you look here, this 19th verse here, it said that the priest shall take of cedar wood. And it talks about the purified water in the lye soap and the beef fat. Well, the red heifer had a lot more meaning to it, but I don't want to get into the spirituality of it. But this solution here that for purifying, what it was, God was pre-equipping them with this to take with them, basically. And I hope you can see this in a minute, but. He was telling them how the ingredients to use in order to make these ashes. And then whenever that they was confronted with these diseases, or somebody had been contaminated with these certain plagues or certain diseases, then they would have those ashes there, and they would mix them ashes then with the purified water, and they would apply them, and they would have to be quarantined for 7 days. I know I hadn't got all this down good down together yet, but I thought it was pretty fascinating how it goes along with a lot of things, you know, that even actually goes on today. But in God's ingredients of purifying, he included the hyssop, which was a herb plant that's in a folk medicine as a stimulant, antiseptic, or a cough reliever, still used today. So not only did he use the fat from the heifer and these other ingredients, but he also used the hyssop plant. And I had no clue, but that hyssop plant is still used today as an antiseptic. And never knew that. But God did. And so these are the ingredients that he was telling me. You put all this stuff together. And God also included the scarlet as the colored wool, which when it burnt or melted, it created a fiber for cleansing, similar to the grit today of lava soap. When they would burn the skin and things of this heifer, and they would put this scarlet in there in the fire, and they would put this wood in the fire, Well, when they would take those ashes, then the ashes would be have a fiber to it that was gritty. And then when you read about it, it comes to find out, just like lava soap, especially men that use lava soap, it's almost like a sand in there or something. And what it does, it makes it scrub. And so he even had them to put this scarlet in there, and when it burned it, it just it made a grit to it. So his recipe's pretty neat, isn't it? And then I wanted just to throw this in. If you was to look over in Leviticus concerning the leprosy, if somebody thought that they started showing signs for leprosy, just like the coronavirus, you know, if you lose your smell, well, there's signs. If there's signs, you need to, you know, go check it out. Well, here it said that if somebody had these spots that came up on them, certain kind of spots, then they was to be cleansed with this ingredient, and then after 7 days, if it was still there, then they was to be set aside because it was declared that they did have leprosy. And the ingredients that was to be used I'm just going to read this right quick. In Leviticus 14, then shall the priest command to take for him that is to be cleansed from the leprosy 2 birds alive. Now here they use birds instead of a heifer, and clean water and cedar wood. There's your water again, and your wood again, and there's the scarlet again and hyssop. And the priest shall command that one of the birds be killed in the earthen vessel over the running water. As for the living bird, he shall take it and the cedar wood and the scarlet and the hyssop, and shall dip them in the living the bird in the living in the blood of the living bird, dead bird that was killed over the running water, and he shall sprinkle upon him to be cleansed from the leprosy 7 times, and shall pronounce his him clean, and shall let the living bird loose in the open field. And he that is to be cleansed shall wash his clothes and shave off all his hair and wash himself in water that he may be clean. And after that, he shall come into the camp and shall tarry abroad out of the tent for 7 days. But he that be on the seventh day that shall shave off all the hair from his head and his beard and his eyebrows, even the hair he shall shave off, and he shall wash his clothes also. He shall wash his flesh in water, and he shall be cleansed. But anyway, it was basically the same ingredients. If a person thought they may have leprosy, he was to use this particular solution and these ingredients, and he was to do it the way that God had told him to do it. And if he was going to be cleansed, he would have been cleansed from that. If he was still, after 7 days, still had the sores and still had the spots, then he was declared unclean, and he definitely had leprosy, and he was to be put out and to be put aside. Back in Numbers, in that 19th and verse 7, says, then the priest shall wash his clothes, and he shall bathe his flesh in water, and afterwards he shall come into the camp, and the priest shall be unclean for 7 days. And he that burneth the heifer shall wash his clothes in water and bathe his flesh in water, and shall be unclean until 7 days. And a man that is clean shall gather up the ashes from the heifer and lay them up without the camp in a clean place, and it shall be kept for the congregation of the children of Israel for a water of separation. It is a purification for sin. And that word sin there, I looked it up, and what the root word of that word is penalty or punishment. So they was to take, when they combined these ingredients that the Lord had told Moses to combine, and they would burn all those ingredients, including that heifer, which had the beef fat in it, And they would take the ashes of that. It said there that they was to take that and they was to put it up in a clean place and they was to preserve it. And it would be used as a water of separation for their sin or for their punishment. Because what was fixing to go on was they was fixing to be contaminated with diseases. They was fixing to go into battle with the Moabs. And what you would find if you read over in the 31st chapter of Deuteronomy, when they did go into the battle with these Moabs, it said that if one of them had come in contact with a Moab or had killed a Moab, that they went after the battle was over, they was to come in and they was to take it, referring to this water of separation, this ashes that was preserved for cure. They was to take this ashes, mix it with a purified water, and they was to use it, and they was to I don't remember exactly how it was, but they was to be set aside for 7 days, and on the third day they was to wash and be bathed in it. They was to wash all their clothing and all that stuff in it, and then on the seventh day they would wash in this very same thing again, that they would be purified from the disease that some of these Moabs had actually carried. So when you look at a lot of this, it has a twofold meaning. There's a spirituality part for the cleansing, but it also had a humanistic purpose to prevent them from gathering diseases. And I've always believed that the answer to every problem in the world can be found in the Bible. There's nothing in this Bible that we have not caused ourselves that God does not have a cure for. Every bit of it. Every bit of it. So I just thought it was sort of fascinating to me I'd read through the books of Moses and stuff about purification and sanctification and just think of it as religion, ritual, because it was that. But it also had its purpose. They were fixing to go through a land that they had never been. They was going to be exposed to things that they were not immune to. And in doing so, they was going to be contracting diseases and things. So God didn't just furnish them with manna those 40 years, and he didn't just furnish them with water from a rock, but he furnished them with a solution to diseases, to medication, to diseases, that when they would contract these diseases, that they could actually be cured from it. And I just thought that was all pretty neat. And then when you go all the way then up into the 1800s, and you find over in Hungary a man by the name of Simmelis, who discovers this solution, and in his solution, the same ingredients that he come up with was primarily the same ingredient that was found in the Bible. Now, these things that he had discovered, they did not cure the disease, but they prevented the spread of it. The germ theory was not known at the time, so I was just really, really amazed when I found that solution there that he'd come up with, and I studied it out, and it was basically the same things that's used a lot in Lysol, and that is one thing. But then the very fact that even Lysol, the things that's in Lysol, the beef fat and some of these things, is actually found in the Bible as a cleansing. So just thought that was pretty fascinating. And this, like I said, this man Simmelis, I mean, they was literally thousands of people in the 1800s in that area that died. So once that this was figured out and people started using his method of not necessarily quarantining, but of the cleansing and the antiseptics and changing all their bedclothes and everything. See, it's just like whenever somebody over here come in contact with someone. And if you read over in Deuteronomy over in the 31st chapter, what you'd find it, when they would go in and they would go into battle, Well, when they come back from the battle, it said that they had to take their spoil. You know, everything that they took from the Moabs, everything that, would burn, and it names over the gold and the silver and the lead, named over some different things. It said that those things, they would take them and they would purify them by putting them in fire. That's how they would purify them. But everything that they took from them, and they took a lot of them captive. They took them captive, you know. So even their captives that they took, they had to be purified in order to come into the congregation of the Lord. And everything of wood and all that, they had to purify it with this water purification. And so when they went into the wilderness, they didn't go empty-handed. I mean, God had pre-equipped them with things that I never even thought about. But that pile of ashes, it was just exactly the ingredients that God told them to use. And they kept it in a clean place. And when somebody would get sick, they would start using that, and they would quarantine. And they would have to shave off the hair and all that stuff, and all their clothing had to be burnt and all that. I thought it sort of neat how God actually provided even before going into the wilderness, facing things that they didn't even realize that they was going to face. God did. He knew those diseases were out there, and God actually provided for that. So, but anyway, anybody got any kind of questions or comments or anything along that line? Anything at all? Like I said, when all this come up, I'm the world's worst about sitting down at the table, and I don't even think a thing about washing my hands. I just, so I knew, I thought, well, boy, if Lisa's up here, she'll have her a field day with this one, you know. So y'all don't have to mention too much to her if you don't want to. We keep that in between us. But I'll sit down at the table without washing my hands, just don't think nothing about it. I just raised it out in the country that way, and just always been that way. But there's a time and place for everything too, isn't there? I've told here before about the guy that was sort of in a hurry, and he's trying to get back to the house, and he run into some old barbed wire all tangled up, and he got in that barbed wire and scratched his leg up, and made him so mad. I just picture that'd been me too. I'd been mad and frustrated about getting tangled up in that, and he's trying to get loose out of that. And while he was doing that, he glanced down right in front of him, a copperhead, right in his path. I mean, and then he said it really didn't. Of course, he killed the copperhead, and he forgot all about his scratches, and he didn't even dawn on him for a day or two. But a day or two later, it just dawned on him. Man, if I hadn't got tangled up in that barbed wire, I'd have stepped on that copperhead. I think he was a little bit grateful for that old wadded up barbed wire after all. And so some of this quarantining and some of this, I guess I need to change my attitude a little bit, or be thankful that we've got the knowledge to be able to help ourselves a little bit more so than what we do. I'd much rather get tangled up in some barbed wire than get bit by a snake.
That's kind of thinking along the same route. And I don't know, it blesses my heart to think that when Adam was in the garden, hadn't failed yet, none of this, you know, hadn't happened. He's never been cut. He's never had a reason to cleanse. But outside in the wilderness where he's going to have to toil not many years hence, there's already a little green shrub with purple flowers all over it. Not just his cleansing, but his relief. My understanding is it's a member of the mint family, right?
I'm not sure.
So when you rub it on there, it's kind of like Bengay or Biofreeze or whatever. It soothes at the same time that it cleans it. It just blesses my heart.
Yeah.
And like I said, before he even needed it, that little green shrub was growing up all over the wilderness.
Amen. Amen. Pre-equipped. That's and we don't recognize that. Maybe if we did, we wouldn't be as hesitant when the Lord directs us to go. We need to have faith that God has pre-equipped us. Come what go. Through that old storm, I've always said there's a little old place called the eye of the storm, and there's calmness. And he placed the eye of the storm there too. So, all right, appreciate these comments. Anybody else? Anything at all?
We were driving down the road one day, right there when we get to Wakewood, and that big yellow dump truck of mine, Jake was driving a load full of mulch. And he pulled over, and I was behind him, and I pulled over. I got out, ran up there, I said, what's wrong? Something wrong with the truck? And he said, no, I just had to pull over. I said, well, get on down the road, we got some trees to do. And he got past Kenneth Calvert's right there at that crossroad is, and a semi tire come off another truck, and I'm talking about probably 10 foot in front of him, and it just shot up that hill to the right there, and like it's like rock. And I pulled over, there wasn't nothing wrong with the truck, he just pulled over. And about 10 foot in front of him, that semi tire come off. It probably killed him. I mean, it ran right in front of him.
Yeah. 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 God allows these. Yeah. Yeah. God allows these things. Same things what you was talking about. I've told y'all before. Whenever me and Lisa left the house about the same time, and she was going to Hendersonville, which I knew she was going through Westmoreland, and heard about a major car wreck there. Well, Lisa had got. And of course, the time frame on, I thought, man, you know, it really scared me. But she had got to town, and she had forgot her bill, her pocketbook, and she had to go back and get her pocketbook. I mean, I'm not saying that, you know, but many times God puts these obstacles to help us to detour certain situations. I believe He's in control of things. I'm not at all saying that. Well, Lisa would have been in that wreck, but. Boy, the time frame on it would have been a whole lot closer had she not turned around and went back to get her pocketbook. So I think sometimes things like that happen for a reason, for a purpose.
When Randy and Samantha got that little silver car that she just had, he worked third shift and I worked first shift. Well, I was headed in work and he was sitting. He had hit a vehicle. Of course, you know, I got my hand. One up there, and he said it could have been worse. You know, God said it could have been worse. And, you know, I started begging him to forgive me for thinking like that.
Yeah.
You know, even if it is a little ignorant or whatever, you know, God's looking out for us. I believe He is.
Amen. Amen. I do too. So just remember, there's a purpose for everything that happens. All right, anything else? All right, if not, we got just about 5 minutes or so. Again, remember our service today. Remember Brother Jeff, if it's Lord's will for him. And church, be praying over a revival helper. We've got an effort meeting coming up just around the corner. So let's be in prayer for that. Just consider yourselves dismissed for a little while.